This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This Day in Sports History. Hey there, and welcome back to This Day in Sports History. It's May 9th, and on this day in 1970, a horrific crash at Darlington nearly cost Richard Petty his life, but it did result in one major safety update that is still used today. The NASCAR boys were racing at the track Too Tough to Tame in the Rebel 400. Petty was racing his trademark blue number 43 Plymouth, but not the one he wanted to be driving. He would have preferred to be driving the Superbird model, you know, the one with the big wing on the back. But Petty had wrecked it during practice a few days before, and his backup was his short track Roadrunner car, better suited for North Wilkesboro or Beltsville. So here he was driving this dump truck of a car, trying to get around the lady in black as fast as he could. Around lap 166, Petty pushed his car a little too hard going into turn one, and he brushed the outside wall pretty hard. The impact threw the front end out of whack, and now it drove even worse. But he was able to get it back up to race speed, with the only hope at this point to salvage as many points as he could here in the early part of the season. But on lap 176, coming out of turn 4, Petty cut a tire, likely a result of his impact with the wall 10 laps earlier, and his Plymouth hit the outside wall hard. That impact knocked him out, but now the car was heading back across the track towards pit road. His car hit the inside concrete wall protecting pit road at high speed and at a sharp angle, vaulting the car up in the air. And once it came back down, it rolled several times down the front stretch, his left arm flailing out of the window before the car finally came to rest on its roof. As the TV broadcast camera moved into the wreck, Petty could be seen unmoving in the car with his head partially out of the window. A red rag that he carried in his mouth while he raced fell out of the window, causing some to wonder if that was blood gushing from a clearly unconscious Petty. The TV crew switched to a farther away angle, fearing they were looking at a dead man. When his pit crew got to the car and saw his body half dangling out of the window, they thought the same thing. But as they unbuckled his safety harness and pulled him from the car, Petty grunted, letting folks know he was still alive. In fact, despite the horrific impact with the outside and inside walls, he suffered only a dislocated shoulder. Now, one humorous story from that day, now that we know that Petty survived, is the ambulance driver was either new, confused, or nervous that he had one of the most famous race car drivers in his care. He apparently didn't know about a tunnel under turn 3 exiting the track, and he nearly drove onto the track after the race had been restarted. A now conscious Petty yelled at him to stop, and he pointed him in the direction of the tunnel under the track. Once outside the track, though, the driver also did not know how to get to the Florence, South Carolina hospital that he was supposed to take Petty to. Richard said it was quite an ordeal getting to the hospital, and it took a lot longer than it should have. Good thing his injuries were not worse. So, Petty's mom had been watching the race on television, and of course was horrified and nervous about her son, but once she knew he would be okay, she went to work. She grabbed some old race suits of her husband, Lee, and started cutting them up into strips. She fashioned a window net for her son's race car to keep his arms and head inside the race car in case he decided to wreck his race car once again. Now, a couple of things. Window nets weren't a new thing. after a fatal crash in 1964 took the life of Joe Weatherly, NASCAR took the step to say that drivers should use a window net, but they didn't mandate it. After Petty's crash at Darlington here in 1970, NASCAR made window nets mandatory and also included that after a wreck, a driver should lower the window net to indicate that they were okay. Petty missed a couple of races, but he was back in his race car as soon as he was medically cleared. In 1984, a marathon baseball game between the Chicago White Sox and the Milwaukee Brewers finally came to an end. In the bottom of the 25th inning, Harold Baines jacked a Chuck Porter pitch over the wall to give the White Sox the 7-6 win. The game lasted a total of 8 hours, 6 minutes, which bested the previous record by 43 minutes, and it took 2 days to complete. The game was suspended after 17 innings tied at 3 due to the league's 1 a.m. curfew and was restarted prior to the day's regularly scheduled game. The game nearly ended in the 21st inning after Milwaukee's Glenn Ogilvie smashed a 3-run homer in the top half, but the Sox got some clutch hitting by Carlton Fisk and Tom Pachorek to tie it back up. Tom Seaver actually picked up the win after coming in as a reliever and pitching an inning. It was Seaver's first relief appearance in 8 seasons. He also started that day's regularly scheduled game, pitching 8 1/3 and picking up his second win of the day. In 2010, golfer Tim Clark finally broke through for tour win number 1. Now, why am I saying finally? I mean, there are a lot of golfers out there playing week in and week out who don't ever win a tournament. And yeah, that's true, but few had had the success that Clark had had at this point in his career without winning on tour. He had finished second 8 times in previous tournaments, including a second-place finish at the 2006 Masters, a third-place finish in the 2003 PGA Championship, and a third-place finish at the 2005 U.S. Open. So, here in his 206th start on the PGA Tour, and after banking $14.7 million in earnings, he was the quote-unquote most successful golfer without a tour win. But on this day, Clark shot a final round 67, making only 1 bogey over the course of the final 36 holes to beat Robert Allenby by a shot. The, at the time, 34-year-old Clark had truly started to wonder if he was ever going to win a golf tournament. Now, if only that had opened up the floodgates for him. But it didn't. He would win once more on the PGA Tour, that one coming in the 2014 RBC Canadian Open. And in 2002, former Notre Dame football coach Dan Devine passed away. Devine coached at Arizona State and Missouri before going to the NFL to be the head coach and general manager for the Green Bay Packers. He spent 4 seasons with the Packers before going back to college and coaching in South Bend. He led the Fighting Irish to the 1977 National Championship. Now, my younger listeners who may have seen the movie Rudy may remember Devine from that movie as being the obstinate coach that wouldn't give Rudy Rudiger the chance to play. He was not happy with his portrayal in that movie, saying that it was always his intention to give Rudy a chance. And the whole players laying their jerseys on his desk scene, yeah, that never happened. Devine said if players had done that, they would have all been kicked off the team. When Devine passed away on this day in 2002, he was 77. And time now for today's non-sports Did You Know? Saturn's moon Titan is covered in electrified sand. That's all for today. I'll be back tomorrow with more stories on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all six of them. Again, every vote counts, and we gotta show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You gotta go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.